We have much to discuss, but I totally forgot about the quotes we were talking about earlier, Alex. We kind of went off on a tangent and talked about 2012 Beetlejuice and some of the hotspot areas that are going to potentially kind of light up, if you will. But I know that you wanted to continue on the note on the quotes and maybe talk a little bit about the Hopi and some of the other aspects as well. So why don't you go ahead, Alex, and we'll proceed with that.
Great. Yeah, one of the things that I did want to mention, too, before we shift off the topic of the amazingly advanced information that we're getting from extraterrestrial sources, there was one further case study that's in the fourth chapter of my new book, Lightwater, that's really fascinating, that has a lot of bearing on our discussion. And then we'll get into the Hopi material as well, because their information is equally powerful. So the one case I'm speaking about is Yuridir Oliveira, who is a contactee living in Mato Grosso do Sul, Brazil, in a little town, near a little town called Rochedo. And he is an amazing person who demonstrates his fantastic abilities of telepathy, having actual contact with the beings flying overhead. And he also demonstrates ability to bend and eat coins, tear coins in his bare hands. He's been doing shows in different cities, Sao Paulo, Brazil, since the 1980s. So he's quite a celebrity in Brazil, and yet in North America, very few people have ever heard of him, or let alone the profound information he has for us. But I'll just jump into some of the future predictions that he was given by his contactees. And he never ascribes a location to these beings because, you know, they are transdimensional beings, and obviously we don't even have the ability to understand their domain at this point, their planet. But the information they give us is very clear, and they also speak about events very explicitly being connected with the calendar date of December 22nd, 2012, just as the Mayans do, which is very profound. There are very few extraterrestrial cases that actually give dates for the events that they do speak about. So for that day, December 22nd, 2012, Yuridir has passed on the predictions or the prophecy given by, or maybe it's even a future time travel view of events that they've given him. But he describes the scene on December 22nd, 2012 in relation to a galactic pulse. And this is a quote. A giant galaxy was the next image he was shown, with the solar system down there. On December 22nd, 2012, this galaxy is going to emanate a big flash of light that will affect all the suns. Every sun reflects to all the planets surrounding them and will cause a reversal not only on the Earth, but all the planets. It's like God synchronizing the whole universe, like a synchronization ray or beam that would come from God, the Creator. He said it would be seen by any creature on the planet that has eyes to see it. For our planet, there will be lots of solar storms. The suns will get hotter with more solar storms. Then there was another scene shown to Yuridir regarding that same shift on that same day, and he saw the sun and stars moving in the sky. It showed how the human beings would see the earth from the sky from the earth, moving like on a teeter-totter. If you are looking at the sky, it will swing. You will see the moon and stars moving. So they're describing a kind of wobble. Then he describes another interesting event, and I think in this scene, he's being shown by these extraterrestrial beings, and they're speaking about this dark star that we're speaking about in the context of the name Sola Cananda from other extraterrestrials, but in this case they don't identify it directly, they just call it a cosmic body. But I believe that their description of its effect on the electromagnetic fields of Earth is exactly what I'm tracking, because they give an example of Mount Etna as being affected by this cosmic body moving towards Earth, and that's exactly what we have. Mount Etna has been becoming more and more active and getting off ash plumes. And then I have on my time cycle site, on the mysterious fires section, we have all kinds of events happening to evacuate areas of Messina, Sicily, which is very close to Mount Etna. So the unusual events they're describing here, I've actually got a direct line on. Mm-hmm. And this is what they said in when they contacted him in, back in 2001. They said that in 2007, there will be both bad news and good news for human beings. There will be a cosmic body that moves towards or into the solar system that will affect the Earth's electromagnetic fields. This electromagnetic wave will affect some places locally different, but not the whole Earth. A good example is the Mount Etna volcano in Italy. It could erupt and kill thousands of people. The rest of the world will carry on. The beings also said that the science has already got the knowledge, but nothing has been published yet. In the ice caps of the Antarctic, scientists will study the water and find it is more pure, free of heavy water, deuterium. He is saying that they are going to find this water with less heaviness. Scientists will discover this new pure water will retard the aging process by about 80 times. People could live 300 or 400 years. The technology to extract this new water in 2007 will be available, whereby pure protium can be separated from heavier water molecules like deuterium. So that quote is so fantastic for me, that chunk of information they give, because I am tracking exactly what they're talking about when they say that some places will be affected locally differently in electromagnetic waves, mm-hmm. and some will not notice.
Right.
That's exactly what I've been tracking in these hotspots for fires, and exactly in the location that they provide near Mount Etna. So these beings are cluing us in very, very clearly, saying, look at Mount Etna, look at what's happening in localities near there, and that is an effect they're tying directly to this dark star cosmic body that's nearing our solar system, which we're unaware of.
Hmm.
Not only do they provide those details, but they also, in the next paragraph, provide details about energy waters and about this new process for separating out heavy water from light water. And I can tell you the details about that process, even though I can't tell you which scientists have actually, you know, discovered this water in the Antarctic ice caps and tested it to be, you know, retarding aging by 80 times, mm-hmm. as the extraterrestrials say. But the information that I have does show that the atomic mass, the atomic weight of the heavy water versus light water, or protium versus deuterium, those have very specific properties which are different. They have a slightly different evaporation point, a slightly different boiling point, a slightly different freezing point. So all of these things can be used technically to separate these waters. So we're not talking about we need to extract all this water from the ice caps to drink.
Right.
What we're talking about is a purification process that can be used in simple machinery all over the world that allows us to boil off and evaporate through and collect through condensation processes this pure form of heavy water. And I believe right now all water systems on Earth, all terrestrial waters, are deuterated or contain deuterium up to levels of 0.015%. Or maybe it's 0.0015%. Either way, it's a very, very small amount, but all of our terrestrial water sources are laced with deuterium. And this is exactly what these extraterrestrials are telling Yurandir Olivera, that human scientists will learn how to remove from our water and extend our lifespans.
Now, the extraterrestrial gave a date there that this occurred in 2007 or was supposed to or whatever, but again, we don't know officially that this has happened, of course, but do you suspect that it might be the case, that they've actually done some experimentation? I mean, I think the Russians were, was it Lake Vostok they were trying to drill down into or what have you, underwater lakes, or under ice lakes, I should say, in Antarctica, right?
Yeah, that's correct, and they're actually just breaking into a new area right now. So that's certainly been ongoing research, and I don't imagine they're going to publish information like that anytime soon.
Mm.
So I think the extraterrestrials were simply informing on the situation because they knew that fact.
Hmm. And Yurandir, he had this interesting case, obviously, as well, when he was teleported or whatever, I can't remember, through the ceiling, and there was burn marks left on his bed and in the ceiling as well. I don't know if we should go there. It's quite a bit to talk with, but it's, you have images of this, obviously, in Lightwater, your latest book. Is that a very interesting case, this one?
Yeah, it's fascinating because these extraterrestrials are giving him very exact scientific analytical details, like we just described, talking about the isotopes of hydrogen. I mean, that's very detailed information. Mm. Well, you're speaking about as well samples that they provided of his different levitation experiences and transdimensional beam transports, where they literally pulled him out of his house through his own roof using an HHO plasma beam. And I describe all the scientific details and link in my book to all of the physics papers that actually describe that same process being done in labs, not for levitation, but it's been observed that the properties of these plasma beams have the same qualities of light and the same anti-gravitic levitation effect because of the high energy movements within the superfluid plasma that works in a completely a way that's completely contrary to the normal, you know, interactions we have on our planet in the gas environment. Mm. Once the ionization of that water vapor occurs and it becomes an HHO plasma, that involves the separation of the water into their atomic elements and then the implosion of hydrogen atoms to form hydrinos. And that's a term that was chosen by discoverer Dr. Randall Mills, who has been really doing breathtaking work in modeling the interactions that happen in hydrino plasmas to explain the totally unusual circumstances that are found in those plasmas, totally unusual energetic interactions. And one of the most amazing aspects of the Urine Olivera case is the bed sheet he provides, which is scorched in a body pattern around his body when he was on that bed being lifted off it. And there is no other plasma that can reproduce the results displayed on those bed sheets for everyone to see. And I've got micro photographs taken by Linda Moulton Howe of earthfiles.com, who published amazing scientific research on that case and those sheets. And in those pictures, she was not able to draw a conclusion as to what energy source caused the melting of polyester and the mere scorching of cotton interwoven with each other, when in fact polyester has a melt temperature that, if the cotton was exposed to that same temperature, would have incinerated immediately. That's because right. The melting temperature of polyester is way higher. So that I describe in my book, and I relieve that mystery. I explain it completely by analyzing the properties of HHO plasma or hydrino plasma to show that the interaction of that plasma with certain materials is completely different than any other kind of plasma known to humanity, and that this plasma has an interaction with water that is very unique, and that the water absorption that occurs in the cotton fibers does not occur in the polyester fibers, which is why the polyester fibers were rapidly heated to a much higher temperature than the water could allow the cotton fibers to be heated to. So that data is very solid data proving that HHO plasma is interacting there and coincides exactly with the information they were given, because HHO plasma is not formed from the lower isotopes of hydrogen, including deuterium. So all of the information that he was given hangs together, and this bed sheet evidence is the linchpin that proves that HHO plasma is the necessary energy, and that humans now understand how this plasma works, as I, you know, link the physics papers on it, and we can use this not only for levitation, but also for healing and all kinds of other amazing properties that this plasma is now known for.
Now, you have information about this already, of course, but if we look at it from the point of view of mainstream scientists, do you think that they will have to go the route of first discovering this water that was mentioned in Antarctica, so that they later on can devise this technical process that would help them to clean up the fresh water from the deuterium? Or how do you see this unfold, Alex?
I think there are already machines today that can, using the evaporation point difference between deuterium and protium, that you can actually very, once you have the right equipment on in bulk, both processes, you can totally convert and extract that heavy water. And I believe there's an interesting case, too, that relates to that in in the temples of Malta, I was in email conversations back and forth several years ago with Hubert Seidelmeier, who is a German researcher in Malta, discovering some of the ancient secrets there. And he was describing to me an underground spiral structure of a chamber that was broken into by his group of researchers, and they found heavy water all in on the floor of that cavern. And the cavern itself, if you were to take a cross-section of it, that tunnel, which was a spiral, the form of the tunnel was made in an oval, like the shape of an egg, which obviously has powerful acoustic properties. And I believe that the other fascinating factor they mentioned was that there was a vacuum being created in the airspace inside that chamber, so that when they went in there, they needed to bring oxygen masks and equipment because they couldn't breathe. And so those conditions really blew my mind, and I was thinking about that for a while. And they were drinking this heavy water as a healing water found in that area. And all my research showed that that could potentially be a dangerous water source, because they're deuterating themselves and lowering the resonance of the water content in their body.
Hmm. Alex, do you recall if this was called the hypogeum, the structure that they found?
No, this was a structure that is, as far as I know, not commonly known on the internet. There are no photographs of it, because it's a giant underground spiral tunnel in the shape of an egg. And I don't believe that corresponds to anything I've read about the known structures.
Okay.
Certainly, it's related to one of them, and I could go back and get that information in Name Beyond his website, where they were focusing their researchers. But I haven't been there in a while, so I wouldn't. His name is Seidelmeier, Dr. Seidelmeier, and we haven't been in contact either, so I don't want to speak to his discoveries or to him still drinking that water or not.
Sure.
But anyway, the information led me to believe that chamber itself is separating heavy water from light water, and that all the light water is being sucked out, which is what creates the vacuum, and that all the heavy water is being left in the bottom of that chamber. And so I think we have ambient Atlantean temples around that do this, and that the purpose of the pyramids does involve water cleansing processes on an atmospheric level, and that as they start charging up and functioning in the designed manner because of the ambient energy moving through our planet, that we will have a cleansing of the atmosphere, just like Valdor had said in the contacts in the 70s, that there would be a cleansing of our planet. Well, this can happen because of the influence of the pyramids, as well as because of the influence of extremely high levels of atmospheric plasma and auroras worldwide, which, like lightning, clean the atmosphere.
Very, very interesting indeed. So this whole case, obviously, with Oliveira, Randir Oliveira, is very, very interesting. Is there something else from that you would like to mention or talk about, or do you want to proceed to the Hopi quote, Alex?
Yeah, I think that sums up everything that I think Randir is providing as far as the water technology and the atmospheric changes. So let's do continue with the Hopi quote, and I think it's a good one to jump into, because they obviously speak in their prophecies of the red skies, and so these atmospheric plasma effects that are going to be causing a cleansing of the atmosphere and the air on our planet, I think will also be transmuting or transducing the light waves that are emitted by our sun and now reach the surface. They'll actually be changing the qualities of that light, and we'll be releasing intense waves of UVA as well as infrared light. And those are the wavelengths that are emitted by HHO plasma, as studied in labs. Mm. So I believe that the Hopi quotes are really powerful, because they give us the indigenous language for something that we now have a full scientific language for. And the atmospheric changes that they are describing involved with the red dawn, they say will affect every living being on the planet, and that through our DNA, which they refer to as the twins, that will be found in our blood and in every living being, that those twins will receive new messages from these environmental changes, and I think increased lifespan, as the extraterrestrials have been talking about with Randir Oliveira, is something that as well we can ponder and think about in the context of these quotes from the Hopi, who tell us that every living being, even the rabbit, will change. And I think lifespan will be one aspect, but also we have Russian researchers showing that infrasound, ambient infrasound hitting any kind of organism can change the quantum state of that organism. And we discussed in our last interview fish being given stripes and spots by simple acoustic influences that could be measured genetically to have changed their DNA. So the Hopi, I think, within the context of that knowledge, are speaking about things in a very intelligible, logical way that we can now understand to be, you know, the conclusion of science as well, if we're speaking about, you know, the atmospheric changes being as significant as, you know, changing the quality of light and the quality of sound that moves through our planet. So let's see, let's find this Hopi quote. It's great as well because it talks about the International Space Station, which Billy Meyer has already discussed as being likely, like the likelihood of it being damaged or destroyed in these 2012 events. You know, he very clearly stated that, and of course the Hopi do as well. So I'll read a short Hopi quote, and then a longer one that is from another source.
Right.
So here we go. This is the ninth and the last sign. This is from Hopi Elder White Feather. He's given all the signs up until this, and you can read those in my books on other people's websites and mine as well. And here's the ninth and last sign before the coming of the Red Dawn. You will hear of a dwelling place in the heavens above the earth that shall fall with the great crash. It will appear as a blue star. Very soon after this, the ceremonies of my people will cease. These are the signs that great destruction is coming, that the world shall rock to and fro. The white man will battle against other people in other lands with those who possess the first light of wisdom. There will be many columns of smoke and fire, such as White Feather has seen the white man make in the deserts not far from here. Not only those which come will cause disease and a great dying. Many of my people, understanding the prophecies, shall be safe. Those who stay and live in the places of my people shall also be safe. Then there will be much to rebuild, and soon, very soon afterward, Pahana will return. He shall bring with him the dawn of the fifth world. He shall plant the seeds of wisdom in their hearts. Even now the seeds are being planted. These shall smooth the way to the emergence of the fifth world. So here we have the same concept of electrical short out being given by the Hopi. And they speak about that as directly tied with the Red Dawn, meaning when the skies are ablaze with auroras, there's danger in the worlds of man, the equipment of man, and the Hopi live in the way without metals for a very intelligent reason. They have a very simple adobe-style structure that they do not wire with electricity, and I think that's important. So the other quote comes from the Hopi elders and an article transcribed by Dr. Robert Ghostwolf, who's passed on, and this is included on the mandala page of my website. It's a very profound quote, which I believe addresses the plasma atmospheric changes that will create a different quality of light on our planet connected with this dark star igniting into a red sun and our atmosphere reflecting that as well. So they say, the return of the blue star Kachina, who is also known as Nanga Sohu, will be the alarm clock that tells us of the new day and the new way of life, a new world that is coming. This is where the changes will begin. They will start as fires that burn within us, and we will burn up with desires and conflict if we do not remember the original teachings and return to a peaceful way of life. Not far behind the twins will come the purifier, the red Kachina, who will bring the day of purification. On this day, the earth, her creatures, and all life as we know it will change forever. There will be messengers that will precede this coming of the purifier. They will leave messages for those on earth who remember the old ways. The messages will be found within the living stone, through the sacred grains, and even the waters. Crop circles have been found in ice. From the purifier will issue forth a great red light. All things will change in their manner of being. Every living thing will be offered the opportunity to change from the largest to the smallest thing. Those who return to the ways given to us in the original teachings and live in a natural way of life will not be touched by the coming of the purifier. They will survive and build the new world. only in the ancient teachings will the ability to understand the messages be found. It is important to understand that these messages will be found upon every living thing, even within our bodies, even within a drop of our blood. All life forms will receive the messages from the twins, those that fly, the plants, even the rabbit. The appearance of the twins begins a period of 7 years and will be our final opportunity to change our ways. Everything we experience is all a matter of choice. When the purifier comes, we will see him first as a small red star which will come very close and sit in our heavens watching us to see how well we have remembered the sacred teachings. This purifier will show us many miraculous things in our heavens. In this way, we will know the Creator is not a dream. Even those who do not feel their connection to spirit will see the face of Creator across the sky. Things unseen will be felt very strongly. Many things will begin to occur that will not make sense, for reality will be shifting back in and out of a dream state. There will be many doorways to the lower world that will open at this time. Things long forgotten will come back to remind us of our past creations. All living things will want to be present for this day when time ends and we enter the forever cycle of the fifth world. We will receive many warnings that allow us to change our ways from below the earth as low as above. Then, one morning in a moment, we will awaken to the red dawn. The sky will be the color of blood. Many things will then begin to happen that right now we are not sure of their exact nature, for much of reality will not be as it is now.
So seven years of tribulation. When you look at this text, do you interpret that as we're in that period already, or we might even be late in that in those 7 years?
No, I think he's speaking of the 7 years that follow the burning of the sky, the night of the blood skies, red dawn.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
So what we're seeing right now is very subtle compared to what we'll be seeing after 2012. And by that I mean, what we're seeing right now, I use an analogy when I speak to a lot of people about this topic. If you imagine a cookie sheet or a cookie tray out, a metal plate, and you place a geometric arrangement of oil in dots, in droplets along that sheet, and then you put a piece of wax paper on top of that, you slowly have these points, geometric points, spreading until eventually you have no dry area of the paper left.
Right.
So that's how I envision this change happening, and that right now my website is pinpointing these small areas where these anomalies are occurring, and they are anomalies because the rest of the planet is not yet experiencing that level. It's just in those localities. And I believe that what the Hopi speak about these 7 years after the burning of the skies, of the blood skies, is that that's a time period when you have the hotspots expanding from the present state, and after 7 years, they will be fully spread. There will be no areas of low resonance on the planet, as I see it.
Mm. And so this is the adapting. Now, do you believe that the new resonance then that is coming in, that this is the one that will be prevailing? It will be, this is the resonance that's going to remain for, you know, however long time period we have until a new shift comes in, or are we going to go through into a period of more extremes, and then this is going to stabilize itself in some way, Alex?
Well, I do think it will stabilize itself, but it will be in a quantum state that is completely different than what we understand today. And so when the Hopi speak about this, they say that this will be a permanent change, that all life on Earth will change permanently, and the dark skies will change permanently to a red color. They're not saying it will burn one day and then everything's going to be different. They're saying the skies will be completely covered in red, both day and night. We will see the stars through a canopy of red, and we will also see the daylight, the sunlight, through this canopy. And I believe it'll certainly during daylight be a whole range of beautiful colors.
Mm.
I definitely love our blue skies, and everyone speaks to me about this, says, oh, we're not going to have more blue skies, you know, that's so sad. Well, I'm under the impression that we may have plasma throughout our atmospheres that, you know, just in these videos you've seen of the plasma over the epicenters of these earthquakes, they're beautiful, rainbowy-looking, you know, they're like prisms, dividing light up and providing beautiful auroral phenomena. People who experience auroras in the polar regions are totally dismayed by it and blown away. It's mesmerizing, and it's the same effect of watching a fire human beings have done since, you know, the beginning of creation. So I think all these things will be marvelous to watch in the sky, and they will certainly be shocking and things that we get used to. But my feeling also is that the human perception is expanding and that our own bandwidth of visible light will be shifting so that we can actually look into the infrared aspect of the spectrum as well as the ultraviolet aspect of the spectrum. And so on those both sides, if we're expanding our perception, then the skies may only appear red for those who have not received the Earth energy through their feet, you know, for those who have not yet purified their body of all the toxins of human waste. You know, people are drinking the estrogen in their water that people were taking in birth control pills.
Yeah.
So this is what's going to contaminate people and cause 7 years of havoc before, you know, everyone has completely abandoned all of those places and all of these cities have been completely destroyed. And I believe that's when the renewal can come. And the hope you're very clear, as well as the extraterrestrial quotes that I've been giving too, that these are permanent changes that have to do with the environment of our entire solar system shifting.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about that.
Well, that's that is interesting, and that's a good point you made about the potential upgrade, then, if we can call it that, in terms of the visual spectrum, infrared, ultraviolet, and that our perception of light would change as well. Hence, we will see other things, things that today might be in one regard to us, anyway, hidden in those realms and so forth as well. There's other interesting aspects to that. But you're mentioning this as, when I'm listening to it, it seems like reality is going to change so much, and also the physical laws in one regards might be changing as well. And maybe we can take this into the avenue of how much you perceive that this is going to change. We mentioned briefly in the break, Alex, a little bit about levitation techniques on how this has happened. You know, today, last time you were with us, we talked about some of these stones that have been found up in treetops and what have you. We have, you know, different reports and accounts of weird effects happening physically, where the physical laws seem to kind of null out, if you will, and we have even maybe people that could levitate in the future as well. In that sense, can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I definitely feel like the whole goal of making a temple of the body, the old adage, is to increase the resonant index, or the reverberation time, of the water in your body, so that when you crystallize the water in your own body, you are creating parallel faces within those crystalline geometries where sound waves build up and bounce and are maintained because of the mirror-like quality of the crystalline structures. And so as I'm analyzing these levitating stones, I'm looking at the fact that they are all levitating within this geometric framework of hotspots, and that only the stones that are levitating are of quartz or calcite crystals.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be limestones, sandstones, granites, things like that. So these properties that these crystals have are exactly found in waters when people meditate or when people give prayer. They can measure the water and the direct result of this energy. So my feeling is that the heartbeat resonance that the pyramid is creating is like creating a coherent electromagnetic field within the heart resonance. And it's the exact same effect ambiently happening on the ground, levitating these stones with that resonance, as happens when a human being perceives water and imbues their own electromagnetic heartbeat frequency into that water according to their perception of that water or their intention with that water. So for me, looking at levitating stones, it's the same processes are obviously occurring in the human body, but they simply have not been realized to the amplitude or to the high resonance that has been realized in those stones. Mm-hmm. But I do imagine that yogis and traditions in India of levitation also were only happening within the sacred framework of hotspots, and that the acoustic energy is what drew yogis up to the mountaintops to go barefoot and live an ascetic lifestyle, because in that process they could alleviate themselves from the, you know, weight of physical existence, and were literally achieving levitation and weightlessness through the coherence of their heart frequency and the crystallization of the water in their body to be able to reduce their weight slowly as they meditate, as each heartbeat builds more and more energy within the same cyclical system that they're creating, that they can achieve levitation. So I think that's something that does occur and has occurred over the last thousands of years on our planet by adepts in these special places, and that will be something that will be occurring a lot more in the future, not just with stones, but with human beings who are achieving this high resonance within their bodies. And that's exactly the teaching that we have from the Mayan elders, who are presenting the crystal skulls, speaking about the purification of the water in the body, and providing energetic waters that we can measure have gold and silver in them. So, as well as crystalline qualities that are off the charts, and electrical charges maintained that are off the charts.
Yeah.
So, all of these factors come together to really show us that that matter itself, including human bodies, has different quantum states, and that we are now approaching the threshold where we are able to learn about these quantum state changes, because we have enough energy moving through our planet to demonstrate these differences, which otherwise would be subtle. And in 2012 will certainly not be subtle by any means.
So this means in one way that certain things might become easier for us as well. I mean, I don't know how you view the whole topic of entropy, that things are, you know, it's a constant maintenance as it is currently on the Earth, because things are breaking down, they're falling apart. Do you believe that we're going to slowly move outside of that realm? Maybe not totally, but at least lessen the effect of entropy, you know, if not entirely, maybe a little bit. What do you think, Alex?
Well, definitely. You know, the human body will fall apart less quickly. You know, we will have extended lifespans. And I believe that that effect will extend to every atom within our bodies and every atom within all materials on the planet. And that has been proven already by scientists at Purdue University, as we discussed, I believe, briefly in our last conversation. And they've been able to show in the same areas these stones are levitating into trees in Indiana, that in their labs, the isotope that they're studying of cesium is actually, during solar flare activity, becoming less, the decay rate is lowering, so there's more of a coherence and less entropy within the very atoms they're studying.
Huh.
So if that's measurable right now from scientists on the planet, then certainly after 2012 events occur, that these measurements will be easily made on any material worldwide. And not only that, but even the weight of objects will be changing.
Mm-hmm.
And in these hotspots, I've also been able to track, for example, in Sèvres, France, there's researchers who have been studying the international weights system there and discovering that there's now an anomaly that they cannot account for. And I believe that it is attributable to a semi-levitation that's occurring, because those metals are paramagnetic and the bedrock of that whole area is resonating with these deep infrasound frequencies that I'm tracking, and, you know, that are related to solar flare activity and through the pyramid structures create the witness effects. So these are now subtle, and on my website I've been able to pull those together and prove really coherently that these are results from infrasound resonance, and these changes will not be subtle by any means after the 2012 events, and we may not even have the scientific equipment to measure it. But simply, you know, having a piece of metal in your possession, it may not rust like it used to. Literally, that process of rusting may be lowering just as obviously as our lifespans may be. So it's an exciting thing to be able to watch. And we don't need electronic equipment to measure what we're going to be seeing in the skies and in our own bodies.
Hmm. Do you have any information about the Earth axis, if this is something that you suspect might be straightening up for, you know, again, whatever reason, how this, you know, works out physically and all that, but going from the 23.5 degrees or so closer to zero, you know, leaving the seasons behind, maybe even, obviously, in that case, we would look at a situation where we have, where we can plant more food and crops and what have you across the world as well. Anything on that, Alex?
Yeah, I do think that scenario is a likely one, and it's exactly what's described by the Urdangarin Olivera contact case, where they say that the Earth will move and the stars and the sun and the sky will move like a teeter-totter. That would be a pretty accurate description. I think the Bible also has a description of the stars moving in the sky as well, and those are accurate descriptions of what would be visible from the surface of Earth if indeed the rotational axis of the planet was wobbling into a new state, which I believe will most likely be a higher energy state, which, you know, if you're spinning a top and you could somehow spin it in mid-spin and add more energy, it would correct any you know, wobble that might have occurred as you know as it slowed down. So I think that's exactly what will happen on our planet, and that we will return to the golden year.
Right.
And my guess is, too, that we may have shorter days of 360-day year. That's, you know, totally could change drastically. But my feeling is that the ancient geometric use of 360 degrees for a circle corresponds to that golden year measurement of 360 days per year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that makes sense to me, and I always felt that those 25 or whatever days are like, it's because of whatever happened in the past that offset this, and included in that I would take the Earth's axis as well in that regard, and that would mean a much easier an easier environment for the majority of human beings, I believe. But again, what this would mean in the full context, we'll just have to see if we're here to live through that. But what do you make more of the? Do you want to stay a little bit more on this topic of levitation or physical laws changing, or again, do you want to move on to this incredibly interesting area of I would term it modern alchemy to coin a phrase of Dr. Champion, Alex. Where do you want to go next?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a great segue to that topic, which is a super complex one, and of course defies the rules of physics as given today. But certainly we have the ancient Sanskrit knowledge, and throughout the world there are legends of alchemy occurring where base metals were converted into precious metals, for example, lead to gold, things like that. So a lot of my work involves tying together these ancient legends, or in this case also with information from extraterrestrials, and with the latest discoveries of scientists. And I'm finding over and over again in every chapter of my book, I've given data that proves that things told by extraterrestrials to human beings in the 70s are now being rediscovered in the lab and can be used in the scientific context. And as well, you know, this also explains enigmatic passages from the Bible and, you know, different things in the deep human past that we couldn't understand. You know, in the same way that the Mahabharata speaks about nuclear explosions, that until, the developments of nuclear warfare on Earth re-emerged, we didn't understand what that meant.
And, that's right.
You know, mushroom clouds were described, and all of a sudden we have Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and we identify what that is. Mm. Well, in the same way, there are quotes given to Billy Edward Meyer in Switzerland from his Pleiaden contacts, who described in the 70s, I believe it was in 1975, he asked them point blank what they use for the metals of their ships and how they levitate and what kind of metal that is, if it's a different one than we have presently on Earth available to us or whether we could make it. And their answer was so astonishing, and I quoted it in full in my book, and then I connected with work that modern scientists are doing, contemporary scientists right now. And, of course, his information is 35 years old. So I'll give that first quote from his contact, Semyase, who was visiting from the Pleiades star system. And then I'll go into the work of Dr. Champion, who is a researcher in Utah, who is doing exactly what this extraterrestrial described 35 years ago. Hmm. Meyer asks her, quite simply, we would like to know what sort of metal you use for your beam ships. Semyase answers, this I can explain for you. We gain it from a process of conversion from lead. We extract this soft metal from many things, as, for example, lead-containing atmospheres of stars, from waters, from different plants, etc., as well as from the decay of different ore stones of stars and destruction. By an, according to Earth understanding, very difficult process, we convert the lead substances we assembled into the soft metal lead, which we then change by further mechanical chemical processes into a hard metal form, which is much harder than your metal, which you call steel. This still is unserviceable in this form for beam ships because it must be polarized by further processes of conversion into a beam ship suited alloy of a special sort and character, about which I am not allowed to give details. The final product, which must have quite certain characteristics, consists of a copper-nickel-silver alloy, which for certain of the beam ships also contains gold. Meyer. Oh yes, thus an alloy which we could produce on Earth. You mentioned a lot of manners before and ways in which you gained the lead. Here it has struck me that you have mentioned no word of an ore mining of Earth kind. Is this sort of obtaining ores not usual with you? Sannyase. Ore mining or other mineral mining on a planet or another star is done by us only in extreme emergency because this process is equal to the destruction of the star. A planet or another star is never exploited in the form as is done on Earth. What the Earth human being does by that is equal to the destruction of the planet. The first evil effects of this destruction came up on the Earth already some decades ago, and at the present time it is already experiencing the pains of the destruction itself. This is to understand the way that the Earth human being exploits his planet and robs from it its fundamental life force when he deprives it of its oil, gas, and the different ores. So then I want to continue. The next day, he met with her once again, and he was, of course, curious about what she had said and asked again. And she provided samples of metal from her civilization's metal construction process and further described their technique. Here I have also brought you some metal of three different working steps. The first working step absorbs the lead substances from the atmosphere and condenses them into pure lead. The second process distracts from the resultant metal all dangerous radiations. Then the lead is fed into heat converters, which, without the addition of any other metals, converts the lead by several processes into the alloy. Meyer, you mean that the lead becomes liquefied first, and in this step suffers the conversion? Sannyase, surely. There do all right exist possibilities for the alternation of stuff, but these possibilities are not given for us. But our scientists have already well achieved successes in experiment. For the present, however, we still convert the metals the old-fashioned way in heat converters, and as said, this happens in seven different runs. The metal becomes liquefied, like with you, in furnaces, to suffer then by distinct oscillation and alternation, but just to a certain value because of the different working steps that are necessary. Each final product is then pushed by pressure through a cooling spiral, where then are generated the small figures as you have them here before you. The process is repeated sometimes, while with each new process the value of the different metals increases and becomes the targeted alloy. The sixth working process then affects the complete alloy. The cooling spiral contains usual water, which we obtain especially for this process in a condensational manner. So, that information scientists have been looking at for years and wondering, wow, if this is true, amazing. We just need to heat up the metal to liquefaction point, give it certain frequencies, certain oscillations, and then we have a conversion happening. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that begs the question, what are the frequencies? Obviously, Sannyase did not give Meyer the resonant frequencies, partially because they're so complicated to explain and to give, but as well because she was not intending that this information would be used immediately, but that once scientists had on Earth had achieved a certain understanding of atomic physics and the isotope measurements and the different diameters of atoms, that we would all of a sudden figure out how this conversion was possible, and we would have those frequencies provided for us by that research. And that's exactly what I found when I started looking on the internet to try to understand this quote from Billy Meyer given 35 years ago, before my birth, And yet today there is a man in Utah named Dr. Joe Champion, who in St. George has developed the Phonon Resonance Institute and has started up an LLC called Low Energy Nuclear Change, LENC. And with this concept that Semyase presented, he is actually producing precious metals from base metals on the macro scale in hundreds of pounds per week.
That's amazing.
So,
yeah. And you stumbled over this, I guess, fairly recently, the whole process, LENC, Low Energy Nuclear Change, right? That's what it's called.
Yes. And that was a term well coined by Dr. Champion because it's a resonant process. So on my website, I go into this as resonant atomic transmutation is as a way, like the term LENC, low energy nuclear change, that term as low as resonance will explain how this is different from nuclear fusion. We're not talking about two base metal atoms fusing together to form a precious metal atom. We are talking about a low energy event involving resonance as the main component for the conversion to occur. And the subatomic mass that's being added into the metals to increase their weight is not coming from within the metal itself. It's coming from outside the metal. And that information is proprietary information. I'm not allowed to reveal that. But I have a very coherent theory that explains how these metals are becoming heavier when you convert them. Because literally, if fusion was occurring, you would have half as many atoms as you start with, mm-hmm. or something on that order. You'd have a lessening of the mass. When in fact, what is actually being witnessed and documented by Champion over and over and over again, and I myself have witnessed this on a micro scale, is that the metals are getting heavier.
That's right.
The mass is increasing, and the number of atoms is staying the same, apparently. So that mass is coming from outside of the metal, and we've now been able to define where it's coming from, how to increase it to the point where we can get a macro reaction.
In the article that you have on the website, it says 100 pounds of copper was placed in a single phonon resonance device and produced 800 troy ounces of gold and platinum. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's correct.
So what is happening here? What is going on? How is this possible? Obviously, this means quite a few interesting things. In terms of our relationship to gold, you know, if this were to get out, obviously. But how is this possible, Alex? How do you explain this, Don?
Well, Dr. Champion very coherently explains it with a very tight formula that he's put together that has to do with heating an atom up such that it has a diameter that matches the target atom at rest. So to put that another way, say you want to turn lead into gold, then you could, let's use another example, let's use copper. That's a more simple example, and that's actually the process that Dr. Champion is using in Utah, is he's taking copper and converting it into, he's trying to convert it into 100% gold, and what he ended up with was amazing. It was 91% silver, 3% gold, 3% platinum, and I think 1.5% nickel, and 0.5% of copper or something was left over.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting almost, I think, 99 or 98% conversion into precious metals, but if he's not able yet to control the frequency resonance enough to be able to get a single product, a single metal product,
right.
And that may never be possible. We don't know yet if we can get the... you know, that result.
Hmm.
And the Pleiaren do not tell us that they get that result either. They're obviously starting with one metal and making an alloy made of several metals. So perhaps it's not ever possible to convert 100% of one alloy into 100% of another alloy in one step. But anyway, I've got a quote here from Dr. Champion where he releases his formula through his website and explains this idea of heating atoms to certain diameters and measuring the diameter of atoms and using heating or cooling processes to shrink or expand atoms to resonate at the proper size that you want.
So here's what he explains. Mm-hmm. Dimensional phonon resonance occurs when the space occupied by one single isotope is exactly the same as that of another isotope in its rest state, i.e. 25 degrees Celsius. This event can only occur under the following two conditions: the expansion of an isotope by heating or the contraction of an isotope by cooling. Due to the natural characteristics of elemental properties, this event is extremely rare and can only force, and one can only force the event under select conditions. To determine the phonon resonance formula of an isotope is, it is necessary to apply the following formula. And I've given the formula here. I won't, you know, try to explain it verbally, but
sure.
It's on my website at humanresonance.org/transmutation.html. And you can also read that article from the main page of my website as well as from the time cycle section. But that formula basically is a very simple one that has a cube root of an equation involving the density of a selected atom and the atomic mass of that atom and the multiplied by Avogadro's constant. And doing that simple equation, you come up with a frequency that your target element will need to turn into, or sorry, that your base element will need to turn into your target element. And Dr. Champion continues giving us the temperatures that he's realized that are necessary for the resonance of turning silver into gold. In the formation of gold or other elements from a dimensional reaction, the conversion will occur without excess energies or nuclear signatures by heating silver to a temperature of 43.2 degrees Celsius. To achieve maximum conversion of silver into gold will depend on the dwell time at resonance temperature. To date, visible conversion of silver to gold has taken as little as 6 hours, with 2% conversion taking up to 24 hours. The reaction is safe with no toxicity. And then Dr. Champion provides us with the resonant frequency of silver to gold at 38,962,532 hertz. So these are megahertz frequencies that literally have to do with the diameter of the atom and then a standing wave bounding that exact diameter in the exact way I'm describing in the pyramids, how the resonant frequency of the Great Pyramid is based on its base length, which is the human heartbeat of 1.45 hertz or 765 feet. So he's basically saying, take a giant pyramid, you can turn it, or take the resonant frequency of that structure, and you can levitate stones, is what I'm projecting, and what I'm describing. And he's applying that same physics, saying take the resonant frequency or the resonant diameter of any atom and heat it or cool it to mimic another atom, and then, you know, resonate at that frequency for a period of time, and you will be informing that atom with the goal, with the target. And just like you levitate a stone with these pure standing waves within pyramids or outside pyramids, you can levitate electrons, protons, and neutrons through the atomic structure through resonant processes of low energy. And that's something that totally goes against what modern physics has understood thus far. And that's a resonant process of atomic transmutation that is not nuclear fusion, but involves low energies and very cost-effective methods to reach not only a conversion of base metals to precious metals, but literally he's talking about any substance into any other substance, given you can do several steps in the process.
It's interesting. I'm looking at the website here as well, drjoechampion.com, and we will link this up. It's also linked up, obviously, from your article, Alex, and he's updating news about this currently, latest from February 1st, 2011, offering people in the United States to actually get involved in this process as well, both for skeptics and those who just are curious about this, obviously, to buy copper from him that he converts into gold for you. Another news posting from at the end of January, it says, finally 100% proof that the U.S. will become the precious metal leading producer. Well, I no wonder, huh, if they got this technology. That's incredible. Do you know if Joe Champion got into this because of some of the information that you talked about? Not that you relayed this information to him, but I mean, you're mentioning the Billy Myers case here and his story. Was that the background for Champion to get involved, or do you know if that was something completely different?
I'm under the impression I have not been able to ask him personally, although I have sent him my research and sent the articles. He and I are not in contact, and he doesn't know me personally. I don't know him personally, and I would like to keep it that way because he's doing very sensitive work that is getting a lot of attention, and he's, you know, very transparent with it, I think, which is important in his, you know, what he's trying to do with it.
Sure.
So I don't think that he's been at this for over 30 years, and, you know, he started in micro quantities with high energies that were not profitable, but he was getting results in the same way a lot of scientists have been able to get results with lasers and high-energy systems. I know there are people who, using microwaves, microwave ovens, jimmy-rigged to produce gold, have been doing that as well. Hmm. But the key with the breakthroughs that are provided in the information given by Billy Meyer, as well as the latest research from Dr. Champion, where he's gotten to the macro production of metals using resonance, using low energies, now that information, I think, is it took him 30 years to get, and if he had access to the information that Billy Meyer had access to, if he had read those things, I bet that time would have been at least half, you know, halved by having the advanced information from the extraterrestrial source. So I feel like a lot of my work is in synthesizing this so that we can, I mean, Champion has still only been producing from copper, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have results from all the other metals yet, and part of the most important aspect of the research that I'm presenting and reflecting back to him is to say, look, these processes are used specifically for a multi-frequency resonance of metals that has every metal on the periodic table in the alloy. And that's exactly what Tibetan singing bowls and Bhutanese singing bowls are attempting to do. They're trying to increase their reverberation time and their resonance, and the humming and the healing effect that they produce is produced by the fact that there are 10 or 7 or sometimes just 3 different metals used in the alloy. Mm. So we have Sanskrit traditions that directly use this knowledge of atomic resonance and knowing that different metals will sing differently together and create a higher set of harmonics and subharmonics and a multi-frequency oscillation that is not only good for human health, but also creates the conditions where levitation can occur. So Dr. Champion, I don't think, is aware of these connections, because when I, you know, I have not gotten a response on that aspect of the research from him, and that's really the only direct communication that I've had with him. I know I have research associates who are working with him, and you know, the network of people working with Dr. Champion is constantly expanding, and I know that some people have had frustration with it because they haven't had the funds to take the steps, even though they have the information from their licensed technology contract with Dr. Champion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, certainly there are still licensees of his who have paid for this technology who themselves don't have the funds to start producing on the scale that Dr. Champion has proven is possible. And I think it will be a short period of time, you know, a matter of months before those who have all purchased those licenses, which I think the numbers are in the, you know, many, many dozen. I have no idea what they are, but this is definitely a new technology that is expanding around the world, and especially in the USA. And, you know, I hope to be able to contribute the knowledge of anti-gravity and levitation to its use.
Yes.
And I think, you know, one of the things Dr. Champion states on his website, which surprises him, is that he's made his announcement of these technological discoveries to the Department of Energy, the U.S. Department of Energy in Washington, D.C., and that's one of the main things that I've published on my website concerning his work, is his announcement to the DOE on December 21st, 2010. And in that announcement, he explains that he has macro conversion of metals and it's reproducible on the macro scale, and that this can help the U.S. government reduce the debt and, you know, rebalance the equations worldwide with the economic systems.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether he's sending that information genuinely feeling like the U.S. government wants to do that or not.
Right.
But
my information to him was that they're not going, you know, they haven't acknowledged your discovery, and they won't, specifically because this involves anti-gravity and levitation, and that the U.S. government does have stealth technology that does involve anti-gravitation and that does use multi-frequency oscillation that does necessitate metals of these types of alloys. So this is a major technology that will bring us to other planets, and the U.S. government is aware of that. And, you know, Dr. Champion should, you know, from having received my information, should now have a better understanding of why they're not responding to his discoveries.
Absolutely. And furthermore, if he's coming to this from the point of view of solving the economic situation, I think he has to realize as well that this is the economic situation is just where they want it to be at the moment. They're not interested in fixing this. This is a designed situation that we're in currently. So I suspect that, we'll have to see here. I mean, this is we're alerting people here to the work of Joe Champion, and keep an eye on him and his website here, because, I mean, I don't want to be you know, putting out any bad vibes about this out there, but he could get some people interested in him, if I put it that way, that obviously want to take this technology away from him and absolutely not want to shine a light on this at all, because, I mean, again, people at the outset here might be stared blind by the idea of production of gold, you know, at the outset. But at the end of this process, when people get over the gold high, it might mean, as you mentioned, Alex, the development of new kind of materials and alloys leading to levitation, anti-gravity, what have you, which is a far more interesting aspect to his work. Absolutely.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and I think it's a turning point in the history of humanity. It really is, not just on, you know, the 2012 events that are coming create that turning point environmentally, but we're at a turning point psychologically where we have enough intelligence and enough information accrued collectively where we can realize that mining, just as the extraterrestrial Sannyasi is telling us, mining our planet is the most destructive and self-destructive thing that human beings are doing on this planet.
Yeah.
And that, you know, certainly the negative energy that moves through people's, you know, heart and through their minds and their feelings is directly linked with that. But that in the future times that are coming, the possibilities for transmutation of the human energy field as well as the energy fields within atoms promises that all the limitations that we've been experiencing in this third dimensional reality are going to be relieved in the higher dimensional realities of the future, and that the powers that be, you know, they, I don't want to point fingers, I'm not interested in the negative energy about this, but, you know, your mention of the fact that Dr. Champion should be watched and all of his information should be, you know, learned as quickly and observed as carefully as people can is really important, because the fact is this information was suppressed, and he was in the hospital for 8 months after an attack, which, you know, no news report was ever published on the web or locally in his area on that. So that fact itself points to the fact that there must be some collusion between the big media and whoever decided to attack Dr. Champion. And he was literally near death in the hospital. He had tracheotomy and ribs broken, and I was lucky enough to discover that he was still alive and found that he was posting again, and he went through the eye of that needle already. So I really commend Dr. Champion on his daring vision and the fact that he is presenting as transparently as he can this amazing information.
Yeah.
And he's giving people samples. He's saying, send me a copper bar.
Yeah.
Of a certain size, and in 3 days I'll send it back to you converted.
Yeah.
And he's asking a small amount of money to demonstrate that. And he's saying, you can buy my samples of my own copper converted as well. I mean, what more can you ask of the guy?
Yeah, that's right, exactly. That's amazing. It really is amazing. I haven't really, I have to think about this a little bit and see what this means. It's, that's interesting.
Well, what it means is that mining companies need to buy this technology and pay for it, pay him for it, and stop mining and start making it out of scrap metals. We've got aluminum in auto body shops all over the world, or And all of these waste metals, just like Tanyase says, they probably go around the universe cleaning up toxic spills of like that have iron or uranium contamination, and they convert that into metals they can use for their ships. They would never dig for it. I think that's the level of consciousness that human beings need to arrive at, where, you know, we've got steel rebar in all these buildings that are falling down all around us and need to be rebuilt. How are we going to rebuild them?
Yeah.
You know, the other really interesting piece of information that's popped up in the news recently that I want to include in this has to do with the discovery of the newest hardest material known to man. It's a new type of metallic glass that has just been reported on the 13th of January, and I want to get it up on my time cycle as soon as I can, because Berkeley National Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology are involved in producing this metallic glass, which contains nanoparticles of palladium as well as germanium and I believe a couple other elements.
Mm-hmm.
We see. So basically what they're doing is they're finding that the way nanoparticles distribute and scatter energy within those metals creates it basically stops cracks from proceeding.
Hmm.
So this is the hardest material known to science, and we have Tsunade telling Billy Meyer that their beam ships are harder than any steel known to man, just like this glass is, this new metallic glass. Well, they say that they include every element in their metal. Mm. Every element on the periodic table is included. Even the gases are included in some way in a solid state in those metals.
Mm.
So literally they have all of the atomic resonances in their ships, and they say that that's why their ship they call like a small mini planet unto itself, and that's why they can travel from planet to planet in it, because the resonances, the acoustic resonances of all those multi-frequency oscillations maintained because of those various atoms all being present, atomic signatures, that mimics the humming, the multi-frequency humming that's present on the Earth, which both promotes an environment, a gravity environment for human beings that can be tuned for them, as well as creating the anti-gravity situations that allow that you know, resonant body to leave the Earth.
Yeah.
So in that way, they're explaining the resonances of our own planet and the acoustic resonance of our planet and comparing that to the acoustic output of their ships. And they even give Billy Meyer samples of their ships, audio recordings that directly mimic the Earth resonant frequencies, but they're only shifted into the audible range so that Billy Meyer can hear it and record it.
I personally always had, you know, many question marks about Billy Meyer's story. As always, I'm open to the possibility of this being real, of course. But in your mind, Alex, I guess that these discoveries continue to add credibility to the Meyer case, right?
Well, definitely. And I would say that my financial state or Dr. Champion's financial state directly proves that what they're saying is the most important information for us. You know, it's like I have not built my reactors to use this same technology, and I do not have the proprietary information that Dr. Champion is using to create his reactors, but I understand the process, and I understand that I can build my own reactors using the same process, and it may take me years of work to arrive at the conclusions and the results that Dr. Champion has, but I know that I'm 32 years old right now, almost going to be 33, and this 33rd year of mine is going to be a beautiful year and a beautiful time to start doing that research, because I want everyone on this planet to raise up and experience the changes that are occurring in the most positive way possible. And I know that that's why this information was given to people like Billy Meyer, people like Yuranger Oliveira. You know, this is the most important information we have, and we need to apply it today, and we can. There are people who are doing it, and the whole world needs to take notice, and I hope to, you know, have a role in that, to bring this information to the fore, just like you guys at Red Ice Radio are doing in such an amazing way.
Well, thank you very much for that, and right back at you, as it were, Alex. You have an excellent way of bringing much of this information together in a coherent way and present it like this, and obviously now it's even more brilliant of you in that sense, because you have updating the website. You put out your PDFs out there for free for people to enjoy as well, which is amazing, and we're really grateful for that. So keep doing what you're doing, and hopefully you'll still be in a position where you can keep on doing what you're doing. And if not, let people know. I'm sure there's many out there who would like to, you know, help you out and make donations or support you in some way so that you can continue. But, you know, it's been excellent to have you here. Again, we want to wrap things up by leaving people with the website, humanresonance.org. Go on over there, take a look at Alex's website, take a look at the links, download and read the books, and see what you think about this. And check out this article as well that we have been talking about here about Joe Champion, because that is a really interesting one, and I we haven't even begun to touch upon the potential consequences of this discovery and what this might lead to. So this is a really interesting development, but we'd love to have you back, Alex, obviously, at one point as well, and continue to talk about some of this stuff as we proceed, you know, into 2012, as it were. What's up next for you, as a kind of a side note, though? Are you going to be remaining in Ecuador? Are you going to go back to the States? Where are you heading next, Alex?
Well, I'm going to be living in Ecuador, I think, full-time for a while, and I certainly have to visit the States and take care of more business there, and I'll be in Peru. There's some amazing connections and places to be in Peru that I need to adventure to, but the goal certainly is to be living in Ecuador, and I'll be getting my residency within the year, I believe, and get that going and process. And my goal is to receive people in Lamana and have something to share with them. And if there is anyone really serious and connecting with me, the best place to do it will be on the land in Lamana and drinking that water together. And, you know, if people want to make donations and they're thinking in a big way of helping, we would love to have a space in Lamana, and we're working very hard to get there where we can meet people in person and talk about these things on the ground instead of, you know, reading about them online or, you know, speaking about them through the radio. So I'm really encouraging everyone out there, if they're interested in this, you know, vibes with them and they want to resonate and feel these energies, that, you know, right now in Lamana there's nowhere to go to see these artifacts or to go taste this water. But that's what I'm working towards, is to have a space where that can happen. And I know that the interest is bubbling, where when I announce that possibility, that hopefully there will be people to fill in that space and enjoy the resonance that will create.
Excellent. Keep up the great work, Alex. Thank you again for your time today. Wonderful talking with you again and getting an update from you. So we hope we can do this again in the future, Alex.
Oh, yeah, we definitely will. Thank you so much, Henrik, and everyone there at Red Ice. I look forward to it again.
Cheers, friends and listeners. We'll be back in just a few days with more radio. You're welcome to listen then. Take good care, be well, and we'll see you on the website in the meantime. Bye-bye.